Hello, and welcome to today's theme talk. I'm Helen Simpson. This is my partner, St. Anando, and Milo. We are all Unitarians from the Octagon Chapel in Norfolk. We have chosen to focus on sustaining ourselves as humans. You are all welcome to this time together today, however today finds you. Weary, excited, weary and excited. We're over halfway through now, not the talk. Are you sprinting to the final furlong or limping to the finish line? We look back in gratitude for the time we've had together so far and anticipate the days we have left. We will now light the chalice. As we come to this gentle time together, may this light sustain us, away from the world that tells us to do more, to be more, to have more. Just for today, may this flame remind us that we are enough, we do enough, and we have enough. So, the children's story is a modern adaptation of The Tortoise and the Hare. And we need volunteers. So who knows The Tortoise and the Hare story? This is the trick. Who knows the... So what we need is... We need a fox who's kind of keen on rules. We need a hare who's fast but a bit proud and naughty. And a tortoise who's slow and steady. So, Eleanor, who would you like to be? Anybody else? Tortoise? Yes? Who would you like to be?
I would like to be a fox.
A fox? You're keen on the rules, are you? Oh. So we're all going to start over this side. So we just need a slow and steady tortoise. There we are. So we're all going to start over this way. Now, it's kind of improv. So we have animals, children and improv, so nothing can go wrong. So I'm gonna let you just kind of decide what you think is going to happen according to what the story is, but we'll see what happens anyway. So a hare was making fun of the tortoise one day for being slow. just for the camera, it might be good to stay up. Yeah. Do you ever get anywhere? He asked with a mocking laugh. Yes, replied the tortoise, and I get there sooner than you think. I'll run you a race and prove it. The hare was much amused at the idea of running a race with the tortoise. But for the fun of the thing, he agreed. So the fox, who had consented to act as judge, marked the distance and started the runners off. So you might, yeah, so you could start them off, and then I think we're going to have the end of the race around here, just for the camera. So Fox, if you come, so you're marking the finish line. Yeah, so Lily,
I'm sorry.
You come and stand here, that's it, brilliant. Thank you so much. Right. So this is a modern version, I should say. Now, the old version of the story, the hare took a nap, but we have changed the story for modern times. The hare was soon far out of sight. And to make the tortoise feel very deeply how ridiculous it was for him to try and race with a hare, he takes a selfie photograph of himself. Right. Yes, near the finish. With the crowds behind him. When he is finally happy with the picture he has taken, he decides to post it on social media. The tortoise, meanwhile, kept going slowly but steadily. And after a time, passed the place where the hare was busy with his phone. And the hare was looking at other posts of people winning races. And comparing her crowd size, his crowd size, to other crowd sizes. And when he did look up, the tortoise was near the goal. The hare now ran his swiftest, but he could not overtake the tortoise in time. Thank you. A big round of applause. Oh, you want the phone away? She doesn't like to be apart from her phone. That's not true. Now, that's the end of the story. And as we Unitarians, we'll leave it to you to decide what it means. And we're now going to sing our first song, Slow Down, You Move Too Fast, or also known as Feeling Groovy. Of the tortoise and the hare can be interpreted in different ways. It could be about pride, about not teasing people, but for today I could say it's about pacing, taking things slowly and not rushing. I've been noticing that some creatures are slow and seem to live longer. I don't have loads of examples, but tortoise is one, but also oaks grow very slowly and live long. Myself and Saint both have illnesses that meant that we have to make adjustments to our lives. More specifically, we have fatigue. Mine, due to multiple sclerosis, and hers, well, I'll let her tell you more about that. So how do you live a full life when you can only do one thing a day? How do you rest when there's so much to do? My talk is about the spiritual lessons I've learned from having a chronic illness. Slight spoiler, it took me a long time. So let me begin with the question, how do we sustain ourselves? So sustainability is kind of a bit of a buzzword, isn't it? And other words that I've heard similar are future-proofing. And around the same time as sustainability became a thing, there also seemed to be the phrase going forward, which I hate, but use a lot. And one of the problems with thinking about future-proofing is that we don't actually know what the future holds. For instance, we could look at the number of Unitarians decreasing, and we might decide that over time it's gradually going to get less and less until we have no Unitarians. But we don't know that. It might just be a blip. I was talking to a 90-year-old member of our chapel who told me that in the 60s there were a handful of mostly elderly people at the Octagon in Norfolk. And we might have predicted at that time that the Octagon would be closed by the 80s. But we now have a good 20 to 30 each week, with many that attend regularly but not every week, which seems to be a thing now. Perhaps Unitarianism might take a different form in the future. Perhaps online. Perhaps in coffee houses. Maybe it will be more like James Heart and Soul. Maybe more like a show that you sing along to. But back to how we sustain ourselves as individuals. I notice a lot of people want to future-proof themselves. One of the ways of doing this is by making yourself look younger on social media. Which obviously doesn't actually make you live longer or even look younger in real life. It might make you feel like you look younger. Myself and Saint had an app that she had a phone ages ago, and we didn't realise, but it automatically beautified you. And as soon as we realised this, we were shocked and immediately took the app off. Then we were horrified by how we actually looked in the photograph. I think we decided to just have it on a little bit. And I can remember someone saying to me, "Don't you want to look younger?" When I was in my late 30s. And it hadn't really occurred to me that that should be a thing. But what are the advantages of looking younger, I wonder? Why do we want that? Will we be more acceptable, more attractive? Will we get a better job, more sex? I don't know how it works. But saying it's better to look younger is actually saying that it's wrong to look old. If someone says, "I'm 57, which is my age," and someone says, "I don't look 57, and they say it's a compliment, it's kind of saying it's not okay to look 57. And I guess you could argue that saying someone looks younger than their actual age is a compliment because you're implying they're healthy. And we want to look healthy. To look unhealthy might indicate you don't have long left to live. And we probably don't want to die. So actually what we're talking about is death. Really, when we dig down, we're trying to avoid death. But we don't avoid death by looking younger. And we can't actually avoid death at all, spoiler alert. A couple of years ago, I had an interesting conversation with God. I was thinking about my job, which was very stressful. I was an NHS therapist. And I was thinking about the number of illnesses I had and the number of tablets I was on. And I thought to myself, you know what, if I carry on with this job, I'm not going to live as long as if I don't carry on with this job. And I asked God if I should carry on with this job. Now, I should add that I had recently reinvented God. Before I asked God this question, my God had been very kind of rule-based, authoritarian, a bit Old Testament. The kind of God that would put you in a whale. For disobeying, yeah. We know that kind of God. So my new version of God was a loving higher power who loved me and wanted the best for me. So when I asked the question, should I leave this job that's killing me and shortening my life, God gave an answer that was the best thing for me. God didn't give an answer that was based on what my department at work needed. God didn't give an answer that was based on the fact that where I worked there were very long waiting lists and I should stay to get through the waiting list. God looked down at me, or across at me, or up at me, I don't know how it works, but at me, and saw that I was suffering and not enjoying my job. And God wanted the best for me. So I left that job. I left my NHS job that I had been doing for 33 years. I should add that I did also talk to Saint. I didn't just say, I've been talking to God. God says I should leave my job, so that's happening. So I changed my job. And it got changed to having dogs stay at our house while the owners were on holidays. It was a lot less stressful. It was actually a walk in the park. I know. So I'm also gradually building up my private therapy practice. Reasonably priced cognitive behavioural therapy available, ask me later. And I also get paid to act and perform, sometimes comedy, but also as an extra. This year is the third year I will work as an extra in a Halloween event in Great Yarmouth. Apparently I'm very scary. I also run Unitarian services around the country and taught self-care to ministers at the GA meeting this year. Because living sustainably isn't just about doing something that isn't killing you and doesn't feel like your soul is getting smaller. Living sustainably is also about sustaining yourself financially. And that can be living also in a very simple way. Living a life that maybe you just need one car between you, or no car. You buy second-hand clothes, maybe even mend clothes. We also took on a lodger called David. We call him David Tennant. But interestingly, living in a very simple way also saves the planet. I bought a book called Save Cash, Save the Planet, which had lots of ideas that kind of fulfilled both. Unfortunately, when I took it back to the library, they said I owed £10. And I asked them if I could tell them some library jokes, the very good library jokes that I'd made up, instead of paying a fine, but they weren't interested in that. In my old job, people would say, this is a marathon, not a sprint. I don't think I ever really got that. When I first joined the NH job, it was slower. It was the 90s. We had a lunch break. What happened to them? We went to the canteen together. We finished on time. Information was printed out by the head occupational therapist and sent round in a pack by the internal mail. At the time, though, outside of work, I was not living sustainably. I was in an awful relationship. The person I was with was very controlling and always wanted to know where I was, even when I was at work and out on home visits. Nowadays, it might be called coercive control. I stayed because I wanted to show people that same-sex relationships could be long-lasting. I think I was also afraid to leave. I also felt that I should stay because they couldn't cope without me. I felt my life slipping away. And I had the thought that if I died, what would I wish I had done? And I knew I wanted to be an artist. So I had an exhibition of paintings of women kissing. They have all been solved, I'm afraid. Soon after the exhibition, I developed multiple sclerosis. It came on fast and aggressively. I lost my sight, was weak down one side of my body, and could not swallow, all within a year. In trying to make sense of this illness, I truly believed God was punishing me for painting pictures of women kissing. Now, to anyone who's not been brought up a Christian, that might seem quite odd. And I had not discovered Unitarians at that point. And I was in contact with a lot of evangelical Christians who did not agree with my so-called lifestyle. And my God was still very Old Testament. I was then put on an experimental drug that stopped my illness progressing, and it's now part of mainstream NHS treatments. But at the time, we did not know it would stop multiple sclerosis. I had healed physically, but I had not healed the need to overwork and prove myself. I was still in the controlling relationship and still overworking. I actually used the miracle cure as a sign from God that I must work even harder to pay back my good fortune. Eventually I started to realise, mostly years later in lockdown, that I was codependent. I was using people to fill up the emptiness inside me. I was rushing around trying to please people, do the right thing, prove myself and look after others. To be a bit like Jesus, which is a tough call. I think even Jesus found it demanding. Part of my recovery was to learn about how Jesus looked after himself. I would recommend reading this book, which is a very Christian book, a very Christian-based book, called Boundaries. And it talks about how Jesus, yes, he did heal people and preach a lot of the time, but also he got a boat and went out into the middle of a lake when he'd had enough, which is like the equivalent of turning everything off, your phone, your laptop, shutting the curtains. He also went to quite a lot of parties. But not all of this pressure comes from within. One of the problems that we have with the human race is that we're so influenced by media and commerce. We don't take photographs of people not doing anything. The photographs we take of things happening, often very quickly. The average TikTok video is about 12 seconds. Film shots, which is the image on a film before it changes to a different image, have also changed. A psychologist from Cornell University called Cutting has been studying changes in films over time. In the 1930s, a film shot was 12 seconds. Any guesses what it is now, the average film shot? 2.5, yeah, very good guess, yeah. So everything is speeded up. I don't think humans are really designed for the speediness. I'm not saying that speed is always bad. Moving fast is not essentially bad, especially in the Olympics. But just the speed at which we do things perhaps does not need to be so fast. If you look at indigenous people who are not based around a financial system of capitalism, they spend a lot of time resting. And we malign that. They only take what they need, so after hunting and preparing food, you would sit and rest. Even in lockdown, when I was just frankly petrified and didn't want to die, the main thing, what did I actually do? I re-landscaped my garden. Now, I don't regret that, but it's interesting how on the news, there was that man walking up and down his garden on a walking frame. And I remember shouting at the radio, just sit down. The whole concept of time and dividing the day up into timetables, getting up at a certain time, it's not a natural state of affairs. It's designed around commerce. Even the humble biscuit, and I love biscuits, I won't have a word said against them, but they are designed specifically for people to be able to eat without taking a long break. The whole Industrial Revolution also made us work around a timetable, because no longer could people just get up when the sun rose and work according to the weather. I can remember my dad trying to get us out of bed and saying that we'll never get a job if we can't get up by a certain time. I remember getting a school uniform and being really pleased with it. I loved having a timetable. I loved finding out new facts. I loved the structure of the day. But in many ways, it was getting me ready for a world where I would work for someone for several hours a day, 5 days a week, most of the year. And in some ways, if you think about it, it is quite an odd thing to do. Sit in rows with people you don't know, wearing the same clothes. You go to work, you do the same thing. Wear a uniform, sit in an office 5 days a week. Now, I don't think that this was, I didn't at the time think it was strange until I gave up work. And then I started to think to myself, what is going on here? And I kind of imagine, I don't know, obviously we're Unitarians, we all believe different things, but I believe in a creative force. And in the Bible it talks about creation being 7 days. But if you actually condense creation down to 7 days, humans appear in the last quarter of a second. So we're very much the new kids on the block. And so I did have this moment where I kind of imagined God creating humans and then getting distracted by like a fallen angel or something. And then looking back and going, oh my God, I don't think you say oh my God. Whoa, you know, like seeing 9 billion people and everything that we've achieved, is that the right word? And just saying, that's not how I thought it was going to turn out. Really not. I talked earlier about having overworked myself, and one of the things that I did was I definitely worked too hard and fast in my NHS job, and I made myself unwell with MS. And one of the things that happens in multiple sclerosis is that you get fatigue, which means that there's a lot less things that you can do in one day than you might normally. And pretty much the only treatment for fatigue is something called pacing, which is not a treatment. It's a management. And it's a way of working around fatigue. So what happens with pacing is that you check in with your body at any given moment to see how tired you're feeling. And then you decide what to do. Now that sounds really simple. You check in with your body, notice if you're tired, and then rest. Very simple. But it's a bit like when someone describes meditation. You sit and notice your breath. Sounds really simple, doesn't it? But we all know anyone who's meditated. It's simple but difficult. So, in the story of the tortoise and the hare is very much like the bust and boom of humans who overdo it. In the original story, he ran and then he slept. So imagine the bust and boom would be sleeping for several days, having overdone it. Now, as someone who was taught to completely disregard all of her emotions and bodily feelings, noticing that you are tired is a massive feat. Just to stop for a moment and say, right now, I feel tired. And the next thing you have to do is accept that that is the state of affairs, that you can't just push through it. And the next thing you have to do is accept that you need to stop what you're doing. And it can wait and be left undone. And your mind might say, it won't take long. I'll just finish this thing off. You can't leave a job halfway through. Or maybe you've been invited somewhere and then you might think, I'm going to have to text that person and they might feel let down. They might not ever invite me to a thing again. I might be seen as untrustworthy or unreliable. I'll be seen as less than. So I've also had to work out the difference between fatigue and depression. And they can feel a bit similar, a heaviness, a slowness. But I can feel the difference now. And depression is kind of almost the opposite of fatigue in that it requires you to get up and move about, maybe clean the kitchen, phone a friend. I need to activate myself to do something that needs doing or something that is pleasurable. Fatigue, however, requires me to stop and rest. I'm going to have some water. I have also decided to remove from my life some of the things that, how can I put it, vex me. I spend a lot less time with certain people that felt they were draining my spirit. And that's not necessarily easy because you might be in a situation where you need to regularly meet these people. But it is possible to spend less time with certain people. It might be that you set boundaries, for example, saying no to someone who's making a lot of requests of you. It might be not being in a certain place where that person is or engaging with different people in that room where they are. It might be, dare I say it, coming off a committee. I know. It's the most controversial thing I've said so far. But it might be that you've done something a long time and it's not really enriching you anymore. And maybe it's a chance for someone else to do that thing. And it might even mean that that thing, not necessarily committees, but it might mean that that thing no longer happens if you don't do it. And that's okay. So now, having done that, my latest thing is something that I've decided, and it's called leaning into joy. So we've heard about leaning into anxiety, which is where something frightens you and you keep doing it, and then apparently, no, it does sometimes, stop making you feel anxious when you do it enough. But leaning into joy. So in my childhood, if something felt nice and there was feelings of joy, then the idea that you might do more of that thing was quite strange. You wouldn't necessarily do that. So it's quite astounding for me to think that you might think, I enjoy doing this thing, I'm going to do more of it. And I'm not talking about temporary joy that might fill up emptiness to mask feelings like sugar, alcohol, gambling, so on. I'm talking about things that follow your values. So what I've been doing is writing songs that are quite silly and performing them in front of people. And I do it more often. I used to often only do it at summer school, perform at summer school. But I've been doing it a lot more. And I describe my work as, if Victoria Wood were heavily influenced by Beyoncé and Barry Manilow. And I find it deeply healing because it has helped me move on from my difficult relationship with the Church of England. So the final part of my journey was to learn to be a mother to myself, not expecting anyone to do this for me, not trying to fix or mother anyone else. It's fine to ask for help or to give help if someone asks for it. But each person looks after their side of the street. And this may sound harsh, but it stops resentment building and allows people to focus on their own needs. So the non-human example of this is carrying a chihuahua that can walk perfectly well. Sane didn't know I was going to say that. So. So I hope my spiritual journey has helped you in some way. And I'm going to finish with a poem I wrote during my recovery from codependency. I have also bought some books about codependency if anybody wants them, they're over there. One day you will love yourself as you are meant to be loved. If you fall, you will catch yourself before you graze your knee. When you are sleepless, you will sing yourself a lullaby. And when you are lonely, you will be the friend you need that day. Thank you. Now we're going to do a poem in a second, but I've noticed that everyone's been getting everyone to stand up in between the two talks. So I've thought of a version of that for myself. So if you're able, I would ask you to stand for a moment. And it's just about a minute's exercise. So I want you to just take a moment to do what I did in the checking in with your body to see what's happening. And it took me 2 years to get the hang of this, so I'm not expecting everyone to be able to do it. But just take a moment to just check in and see what is happening in your body. Not trying to change it, you're just noticing. And you might notice a feeling, even like you might feel like an animal comes to mind, or a colour, or pain, or whatever. And just speak into the room what that is. I'll start. Partial relief.
Shattered and groovy.
We will wobble, but I'm not going to fall down.
Blue.
stretch.
Tight.
Relaxed.
Tingling.
My knee aches.
Need a wee. Cold blue feet. Need coffee.
Frustrated. Awful.
Pins and needles.
Greeny.
Stony shoulder.
Thank you. We're going to read a poem by, from this book, which I would recommend, Benedict. Some people are nodding, oh yes. It's the Unitarian Bible.
For one who is exhausted, when the rhythm of the heart becomes hectic, time takes on the strain until it breaks. Then all the unattended stress falls in on the soul like an endless increasing weight. The light in the mind becomes dim. Things you could take in your stride before now become laborsome events of will. Weariness invades your soul. Gravity begins falling inside you, dragging down every bone. The tide you never valued has gone out, and you are marooned on unsure ground. Something within you has closed down, and you cannot push yourself back to life. You have been forced to enter empty time. The desire that drove you has relinquished. There is nothing else to do now but rest, and patiently learn to receive the self you have forsaken in the race of days. At first your thinking will darken and sadness take over like listless weather. The flow of unwept tears will frighten you. You have traveled too fast over false ground. Now your soul has come to take you back.
Take refuge in your senses. Open up to all the small miracles you have rushed through. Become inclined to watch the way of rain when it falls slow and free. Imitate the habit of twilight, taking time to open the well of colour that fostered the brightness of day. Draw alongside the silence of stone until its calmness can claim you. Be excessively gentle with yourself. Stay clear of those vexed in spirit. Learn to linger around someone of ease when it feels they have all the time in the world. Gradually you will return to yourself, having learned a new respect for your heart and the joy that dwells deep within slow time.
When Helen and I decided to focus our talk on sustainability on personal level, my first thought was a meme I saw that read, "Stop the glorification of being busy." Many of us have busy and fulfilling lives. That is a good thing. But I believe the glorification of being busy is an inbound drive to fill every moment, and it is further encouraged by digitally driven content and fast fiber urgency. Though most of us are aware that modern life in the age of information is unsustainably fast, there seems no slowing it down. But then a pandemic descended upon the lands and gave us a much-needed, though costly, pause to reevaluate the time-distorted pace that the high-tech world has had on our lives. The impact of COVID forced us to stop or at least pause the glorification of being busy, whether we liked it or not. It was frightening, but there was some bright sides as well. Remember how quiet it was? And though Thursday's NHS clapping was criticized by some, it gave a sense of community. Helen and I brought out our drums and wore our onesies and danced. Helen as a monkey and I as a anybody? Anybody?
Unicorn.
There we go. The neighbor's children were particularly delighted with our contribution. Many on our street decluttered their homes and offered their unneeded items on the curb. It also offered a pause to rethink our priorities. Since those lockdowns, an alarming number of people are refusing to return to work, including over 50s taking early retirement and what is being called the Great Resignation. The pandemic brought advancement in video conferencing, making working from home commonplace, and many are refusing to return to the office. Long COVID has slowed some of us down on a less than sustainable and longer term basis. My 3.5 years of long COVID is now being treated as chronic fatigue. If long COVID is a gift from the gods to tamper down our glorification of being busy, it was quite frankly wasted on me. Though my life was full, I certainly didn't glorify the idea of being busy. If anything, I've watched the world and myself get gobbled up by computerized bustle and yearned for some quiet and ease. This wasn't what I had in mind, though. After my frightening hospitalization with COVID in December 2020, I never fully recovered. When I was discharged, I was grateful to have survived, and I assumed I'd get better. I never imagined my central nervous system would be damaged to the point of having a disability. After much resentment and bafflement, I eventually came to accept my half-speed, long COVID life 2.5 years later, more or less, but was then reinfected this winter and my health worsened. On this last New Year's Eve, I had to tell Helen that I could no longer push myself with a delusion that I could continue working my part-time job, though it's from home, that I'd have to put my university studies on hold, though I'd already gone part-time. This was a devastating decision for me to make, but it was enough for me just to get through my day, and I needed to stop and give myself a proper chance to heal. Of course, Helen understood and agreed. I am grateful for the privilege of a secure home and a loving, supportive relationship, very grateful. But regarding my future health, hope has become a complicated word for me. When there was some sign of improvement in my health one week, Helen got excited and I told her, I don't want to get my hopes up. And she replied sarcastically, oh no, hope is bad. Live with a comedian, they said. It'd be fun, they said. The improvement was just a few good days, and I do love those occasions that remind me who I really am. But my focus is managing the challenging days that have become commonplace. Most of us know the long COVID hallmark is fatigue, which is not being tired. It is more like having jet lag and a hangover while deep sea diving in a leaden suit with a small foggy view of the murky depths through a tiny window. It also has impacted my cognitive ability and focus, along with terrific headaches and insomnia. I can't walk more than 10 minutes, and even a 25-minute I have to sit. During this, driving was once second nature to me, but is now overwhelming. Even an animated conversation for more than a couple of hours will wipe me out. This means I don't get out much, and it explains why I didn't dine in the cafeteria this week and mostly sat in quieter spaces when out of my room. The limitations of these symptoms sent me deeper down the digital rabbit hole as it became my window to the world. I watched my friends in theater, with whom I had shared stage, post about their projects and other friends off on travels, while I could only pray for a good night's sleep, a little less fatigue, and a headache-free day. I want goodness for others, but it became too much to watch others enjoy a life that is now far out of my reach. A common internet-derived acronym is FOMO, the fear of missing out. I now have ROMO, the reality of missing out. But am I really missing out? I took social media off my phone as it was too depressing to be reminded how I've been benched from life. I looked at my social media a few weeks later on my laptop and realized it wasn't really worth the fuss. I have lamented for many years how much I missed the 1990s level of technology. Back then, before the internet took hold, I worked my 9-to-5 job, coming home to watch a little telly, go for a walk, read, assemble jigsaw puzzles, write, like with pen and paper, and talk with a friend on the phone, an actual phone, not an elaborate video call, watching myself more than my friend to make sure I was utilizing my face correctly and showing my best angle. Not just sending a brief text or a photo of my last meal, an actual phone call, curled up in a chair looking out the window at the trees. There were a lot of trees in my life back then, and I would gaze at them for hours while listening to music after having done my chores with no bleeping notifications or anxiety that I should be doing something, anything. I didn't worry about being relevant or how many likes my post garnered. In fact, when I came home, I'd cautiously look at the answering machine and sigh in relief when that red light was steady. No one called. Excellent. I could carry on immersing myself in the nature on the grounds of the winery where I lived in my small, tiny drafty cabin, while stories and poems whispered into my ear and I would write them in my journal in the evening. That was 25 years ago, and oh, how things have changed. The wonders of the internet started out innocently enough with email, dial-up, and message boards. But now I've become so disconnected with life that I had to set a timer to get myself to sit out in the garden for 15 minutes to look at the sky. I reached for my phone twice in that time. I've considered a dumb phone many times as I find myself immersed in my smartphone when I should be sleeping or doing the washing up or something more constructive, enriching, connective, or just being a little zen. A dumb phone, also known as a burner phone, is a basic phone just like the first mobiles that came out, for those who don't know what I speak of. While I looked into taking the step, I became more aware of how frivolously attached I am to my smartphone. When I took social media off my phone, I found myself frantically swiping, habitually in this habitual need to find something on my little shiny piece of plastic that had become a constant companion. I decided to put my foot down and stop the madness. My digitized eyes and dilapidated attention span needed a break, so I took off all games and frivolous apps off my phone. I then accidentally uninstalled the internet altogether and couldn't figure out how to reinstall it. Oh my God! What if I needed to look something up? What Saints? Really? I still have my laptop with all the same tools and distractions. I can even continue my daily Duolingo lessons. Even though the laptop is portable, it is too big for my pocket and too cumbersome to take to bed. So it's a good start. I will confess, though, that while Helen and I were chatting about an internet meme after I had dumbed down my phone, I asked her for her phone to look it up. The look on her face was notably judgy. Dumbing down my phone sounds good, but the reality of unplugging has been stressful and daunting. It is shocking to find out how much of my life is reliant on my phone, banking, parking, riding, communication, grocery shopping, and oh, to show Sue a picture of my new cool scooter. My fatigue is such that I have to pace everything. Cooking means going to the kitchen, setting out ingredients, and then resting for 20 minutes. Back I go to assemble the meal, and then rest again. I get very frustrated on how long it takes to cook, but really, what's the hurry? What pressing schedule do I have? None. No work, no school. Mostly Helen and the NHS COVID team telling me to rest, pace, and meditate. Pace, whatever. But I've been conditioned to expect instant gratification and next day delivery. But in the words of Rumi, inside the great mystery that is, we don't really own anything. What is this competition we feel then before we go one at a time through the same gate? I think of these words as I remove myself from the internet, from internet content that is cropped and filtered and edited and posted for the sakes of likes and shares, and don't even get me started on influencers. Influencers, what are they influencing? Fashion, makeup, gossip, and endless product testing. The internet and computers promise to be great tools, but I feel it has made a tool of me. We are more often the captives of conveniences by those proclaiming the priorities of productivity and progress. Progress. Progress of what? Most of us no longer have to chop wood or carry water, though some of us get to. I lost my patience with the lie of progress when I saw an advert for a cheap portable shaver that ladies could pop in their handbag so they could shave unsightly peach fuzz sideburns, unruly arm hair, and hairy toes wherever they went. The ad actually showed a hairy toe being shaved. I imagined an overseas factory of impoverished laborers working long hours just to feed their family under grueling conditions, frantically sweating under strict quotas to assemble these devices from cheap plastic just so those lavish ladies living in Western Obelisk could shave, not only shave their toes, but do so on the go. That, I thought, is the profanity of progress. I really needed to get that off my chest. Thank you. That's over. I do acknowledge there are constructive influencers who share their music and art and valuable thoughts. It is just that they are found on the edge of a very slippery slope, also known as the internet. I am curious, though, if given an attentive audience, how would you want to influence them? What would you want to give to the world? And I invite you to write your answer on your little slips of paper, if you like, or tell me later, because I really am truly intrigued. My revered influencer is Dr. Jane Goodall. Jane Goodall, as you may well know, is an English zoologist, primatologist, and anthropologist. She is considered the world's foremost expert on chimpanzees. There is a passage I hold dear from her 1999 book, A Reason for Hope. Yeah, you heard me. Hope. In her book, she writes of her conservation work that feeds her soul, protects wildlife, and educates the world. When it is time for her to stop and replenish, she looks to return to a national park in Tanzania, where she had spent her career researching its chimpanzees. She chronicles a day where she hiked out into the jungle following some chimps whose families she had watched and walked with for decades. A tropical storm comes quicker than expected, and she hunkers down under a large frond for a bit of shelter alongside the troop. They are not in danger, but the storm is loud and dramatic. As they sit in silent endurance in the freezing rains, she finds herself slipping into an altered state of pure awareness and oneness with the chimps and the world around her. She goes on to describe the new levels of beauty unveiled to her in that mystical moment. I'd love to read the whole passage, but time doesn't allow. It is her abridged afterthoughts I will share after I have a sip of water. Later, as I sat by my little fire cooking my dinner of beans, tomatoes, and an egg, I was still lost in the wonder of my experience. Yes, I thought. There are many windows through which we humans, searching for meaning, can look out into the world around us. There are those carved out by Western science, their panes polished by a succession of brilliant minds. Through them, we can see even further, even clearly, into areas which until recently were beyond human knowledge. Yet there are other windows through which we humans can look out into the world around us. Windows through which the mystics and the holy men of the East and the founders of the great world religions have gazed as they searched for the meaning and purpose of our life on earth. Not only the wondrous beauty of the world, but also its darkness and its ugliness. And those masters contemplated the truths that they saw, not with their minds only, but with their hearts and souls too. From those revelations came the spiritual essence of the great scriptures, the holy books, and the most beautiful mystic poems and writing. That afternoon, it had been as though an unseen hand had drawn back a curtain for the briefest moment, and I had seen through such a window. In a flash of outside, I had known timelessness and quiet ecstasy, sensed a truth of which mainstream science is merely a small fraction. And I knew that the revelation would, and I knew the revelation would be with me the rest of my life, imperfectly remembered, yet always within. A source of strength on which I could draw when life seemed harsh or cruel or desperate. Goodall's immersion in nature was much more intense than mine on the winery, but I could relate to its influence. As I seek to recapture that time, I think it's grossly unfair of me to expect to live the same meditative life when I lived on a winery with a nature reserve and a slow-moving river running through it, where there were no smartphones and only minimal internet. I didn't even have television reception. My life feels so limited now, and it's easy to defend my need for distraction. And as painstaking and frustrating and exhausting as it was to write this half of our theme talk with my hindered abilities, it has gifted me with insights in the task of listing the small things I can do to unplug. Things I've already done. I've already solved the issue of not being able to walk in the woods. I bought a mobility scooter, a really cool zipping mobility scooter. She looks like a four-wheeled Vespa and goes 8 miles an hour. I feel like the Fonz, though I don't imagine that's how I'm being perceived. But what do they know? I take Milo for walk and rolls. He walks, I roll. I focus my attention on noting the different shapes and colors of the leaves as I find a quiet path and go slowly. I have purchased a dumb phone. It didn't arrive in time to set it up, so I didn't bring it along, but it's waiting for me at home. I now listen to audiobooks as I find I haven't the ability to concentrate long enough to read more than a short article. While I listen to audiobooks, I would play mindless games on my phone. Instead, I will play solitaire with an actual deck of cards. When I do have the energy to read, I will read an actual printed book. I could, or well, we'll see, arrange to have a phone call once a week with a friend. A short one, just to get back into it again. It's so odd that it now feels like an odd thing to do. I will only use my laptop on the desk in the upstairs box room where it will remain. Yeah, that seems a bit advanced, doesn't it? I'll just take it one step at a time. As I worry about staying connected while unplugged after having been virtually dependent for so long, I think back to a life-changing insight when I lived on the winery in 2011. I drove into town to volunteer at the Reiki Center, as I regularly did. We gave low-cost sessions to people in need of healing. We only offered Reiki to our clients, but my Reiki mates also wanted to realign my chakras, and spoke of the fine people in the Pleiades star system exploding healing bombs around the Earth on an adjacent plane. Very thoughtful of them, I thought. One of my closer friends there wanted to use multidimensional vortexes to manifest a Martian walk into my hand. I was happy to play along, but I pulled my hand back soon into the exercise because I was worried it might actually happen. What if it exploded? Would the pressure change? What if we could actually do it? I don't think my meager grip on reality could withstand such a blow. More so, I wondered if we could do that, what else could we do? I was not up to dealing with that kind of responsibility. This is an accurate account of my merry band of Reiki mates, and it's important to note as I recount coming into the center at 10 a.m. on a Tuesday morning in September, having not seen TV or listened to the radio, and then told by them that the United States was under attack. Well, as you might imagine, I was dubious to say the least. I wondered from what dimension the attack was coming from. But then they spoke of airplanes and the Twin Towers. They had my attention. I had many questions, but our client, who was dealing with breast cancer, had arrived, and they assured me my questions could wait until later. I tried to keep my mind clear during the session, but it kept coming back to the orbital vision of Earth swirling in blackness, war, and fear. I imagined us on the globe, just myself and two other practitioners treating our client, filling this infinitesimally small Reiki room with Reiki. I squinted to see our little light so faint on the angry globe. It was barely discernible. What was the point? What difference did we make? But then I kept watching and I saw another light as someone lit a candle for peace, and a brighter light as others gathered in prayer. More little lights flickered on as my attention shifted to all the little acts of kindness and care that humans consistently return to regardless of our fears that they won't. As those little lights made the difference, ours was one of them, and our simple act of healing in the midst of a historical terrorist attack on our country was not so insignificant after all. What influence do most of us really have other than to shine our little lights? We are the influencers, no matter how many likes we garner or videos we post. I'd rather be a humble, uncredited little light amongst the flickering sea of goodness illuminating a darkened world rather than another like and subscribe that has no soul. Regardless of our speed, the earth spins no faster. The seasons beckon me to return to the rhythms of the unplugged natural world while it is still inhabitable. I can only hope, there's that word again, that my little acts of kindness and poetic words will influence others to join me on my endeavor to return to that unplugged world. And finally, here's an untitled poem I wrote during the transformative time in my tiny cabin on that winery. It is not sorrow I feel. It is a sighing ache of wistful compassion. It is not terror I feel. It is the grief and letting go of pseudo-control. It is accepting my mortal inability to change the cycle of love and hate, the cycle of war and peace, the endless complexity spiraling existence which only the Godhead can lead. Somewhere in the Milky Way galaxy shines a star with 9 planets, 1 rotating on its side, 3 with rings. If you go to the 3rd from the center, buried deep in the mist, you will hear an insignificant beat. Though seemingly nothing, she is alive in a universe of explosions. She creates worlds and events. Tomorrow survives on the faith of her dreams. You must search with diligence, for she is no more than a neutrino in the twinkle of God's eye. On a sphere of mortality, I am only a speck. Yet, I am everything, and it is a newborn song that I sing. Thank you.
We now have a short silence, followed by a chant in Navajo for Mother Earth. And then during the chant, I invite you to write a prayer, whatever you want, but if you want to write something that you think you would do if you could influence the world, then that would be fine. So just starting with a short silence. seas. I'm excited to see what you've written. A bit nervous because I'm not great at reading handwriting, so we'll see what happens. I hope to read them all. I think we've got time. Stay local. Be grateful.
Be part of the solution. Have faith. You are enough.
Important, give things your finest attention and ignore distractions. Yeah? Find and share joy.
I ask that my hopes and fears I hold deep within are addressed in whatever way God feels fit to do.
Now it's well part time to take back all my projections and just let people be just as they are. Hope I've read that right.
Influence others to think about their ecological and spiritual interactions with love.
Are you giving me this because the writing's hard to read?
Yeah.
Okay.
True.
May everyone know at least once the pleasure of working on the... Does anyone who's done that want to know, finish it off?
It was me walking in the wind and the rain. It's just the simple pleasures.
That's nice.
Oh, that's beautiful. Yes. So I'll say it properly. May everyone know at least once the pleasure of walking in the wind and rain.
You did get most of it. Appreciate the tortoise. Have... And the fox? Hare and fox, sorry. Appreciate the tortoise, hare and fox. Without all of them, there would be no lesson.
I pray I can be kind and take time to appreciate the world around me.
In the silence, see each other's pain reflected in their eyes. In the silence, send them love from yours.
If I could influence the world, I'd encourage us all to work together for economic equality.
Stop. Listen. Learn.
We are enough.
May we learn to pay more attention to our night dreams and daydreams and the serendipitous unfoldings and encounters of our daily lives, the whispers of the spirit.
I think this says, hold out your hand to the person next to you, even if they frighten you, even if you feel foolish. Hold out your hands to the shy, the earth and all its creatures. I'm sorry, I don't think I did that right, but it was close.
May we slow down enough to notice the beauty within each soul and sapling.
Grow a flower of compassion in my heart and send its petals to all who don't have the strength to mother themselves.
May those who experience pain find comforting and safe ways of
coping. Shine my inner light as brightly as I can, whatever the day.
Be a friend to all.
Staying unplugged while remaining connected.
That we relearn the still calmness.
May everyone find and value their creativity, whatever form it takes. May it bring joy.
May I live a simple, unmaterialistic, and joyful life.
May I be a little light that shines in the darkness.
Cook slow, eat slower.
I think that's all of them. It's all of the ones that I've
read. I don't know how to turn that on if it went off, the Bluetooth.
I'm just going to say my end bit of the prayers, and then we're going to sing a song. I'm going to put that there. Oh, Divine Spirit, you are with us always. Allow us to feel your healing energy. May your eternal wisdom guide us as we choose how to use each day.
Do you have lyrics or do you need this?
I need that. Okay. Yeah, so we're now going to sing the song on the other side of your sheet, which you probably don't know. You might know it better than the one we sang earlier. But which was our fault, we didn't practice it. So this is called...
You should have just left it to you.
Yeah. So this is called Return Again. No deeds to do.
No promises to keep.
Take time to open the well of Cana.
Return to the mother of us all.
Return to the land of your soul.
Lean into joy.
What influence do we really have other than to be a little light in the world?
And remember, we are enough, we do enough, and we have enough.
It is a newborn song that we sing.